Former Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter failed to get a sugary drink tax through city council. Can his successor sweeten the pot? I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Looking for new revenue to fund pre-kindergarten programs as well as other initiatives, Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney has returned to the idea of a city tax on sweetened beverages, commonly known as a soda tax, a plan that stalled twice under Nutter. WHYY's Dave Davies looks at the chances that this mayor can get done what the last one couldn't.
Kenney isn't just serving up a dish council twice refused to touch. He's asking them to eat a bigger portion. His proposed soda tax is 3 cents per ounce, higher than anything Nutter proposed. That would boost the cost of your 20-ounce bottle of Mountain Dew by 60 cents if the distributor, which pays the tax, passes the full hike along to consumers. But it appears Kenney begins with a fighting chance, in part because he's begun by detailing very appealing programs he wants the tax to pay for.
But we're talking about things that people elected this administration and elected me to do, and that's change the narrative of poverty in our city by educating our babies as soon as we can educate them, by having community services and community schools to take care of problems that kids aren't getting taken care of.
Specifically, Kenney proposes universal pre-kindergarten, community schools with extra services, and a sweeping plan to improve parks, recreation centers, and libraries. City Councilman Bobby Heenan says those things appeal to council members and traditional revenue options don't.
I mean, nobody has interest in raising any business taxes or real estate taxes. So if there are other ways to generate some revenue with a multitude of benefits, then I think it should be on the table.
Heenan says there's no interest in business taxes, but to some, that's exactly what Kenney is proposing.
Why this tax? Why target this industry?
Larry Seisler did messaging and what he calls grassroots advocacy for bottling companies, unions, and citizens who opposed the idea before. He says Kenney's proposing to fund his programs with a tax that's designed to discourage the consumption of the product being taxed and is thus an inherently unreliable source of revenue. And he says there's another problem, especially for a mayor who says he wants to attack poverty.
This is a regressive tax. No doubt about it, the tax will be carried on the backs of the working poor.
Bottlers and their allies were able to mount such opposition in the past that former Mayor Nutter's soda tax proposals never came to a vote. But there are some differences this time. Nutter initially sold the idea as a public health measure to fight obesity. Kenney's presenting it as a way to fund initiatives council members like. In addition, 10 of the 17 members of council that rejected the tax before have been replaced, arguably with members more open to the idea. And Kenney's being careful to include council members in discussions early. Heenan says the mayor's already come to see him.
He didn't ask me to support or oppose it. He asked to consider it and laid out the reasons why it would be beneficial for Philadelphians and especially our kids.
Heenan says he's open to the idea, and he's not just anybody. He's council's majority leader. Seisler, who will again help fight the soda tax, agrees it's a new ball game for his side.
I think the different council makes this more of a challenge. I mean, when you look at the political leanings of many of these council people, when you look at the relationship between this mayor and council people, you know, frankly, it is a tougher task than last time.
Council President Darrell Clark, who opposed the tax last time, declined comment. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
While Mayor Kenney is emphasizing the much-needed revenue a soda tax would bring, former Mayor Nutter pitched it as a public health benefit. But does that claim hold water? WHYY's Alana Gordon reports.
Soda taxes are so rare that it's hard, at least right now, to assess the real-world health impacts, says Marlene Schwartz with the Red Center for Food Policy in Connecticut.
You do end up hearing people guessing in one direction or the other.
But many researchers, including Dr. Jason Block at Harvard, believe a tax can reduce the consumption of sugary drinks.
Especially for those groups of people that consume really high levels of sugar-sweetened beverages, which includes young adults, where consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages is upwards of 13% of all calories consumed during the course of a day.
Block points to evidence in the UK and Mexico, where soda taxes have led to a decline in soda purchases. Several simulation studies have projected similar decreases. But in the US, Berkeley, California is the only place that's implemented a notable tax last year. Experts like John Cawley, an economist at Cornell, say a soda tax might be too narrow at the city level to have the kind of health benefit one would hope for.
Because either you can switch to other energy dense foods in our tax, or you can simply drive a few miles across the city border and buy the original product at a lower price just in another jurisdiction.
Either way, public health experts seem to agree on the benefit of cutting the consumption of sugary drinks because they're linked to all sorts of health problems. And Schwartz, with the Red Center, says anything that communicates soda is not a healthy option, like a tax, is a step in the right direction. Alana Gordon, WHYY News. Sugar. Oh, honey, honey. You are my candy girl, and you got me wanting you.
The Vatican continues to draw attention to problems associated with climate change. Cardinal Peter Turkson of Ghana helped to draft Pope Francis's encyclical on ecology, and he's been the public face of the church's focus on the issue. Cardinal Turkson, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks to you.
Let's review. What were the main points of the encyclical on ecology?
The three focuses of the encyclical are these. First, the Pope presents the urgency of a challenge, which is the fact that our Earth is not always, you know, used in the best of ways, if you want. And then also humanity itself. So it is to draw attention to these. So these are two instances of elements in our world and society being treated and being made to experience their own weaknesses. And then he makes an appeal to all to try to undertake whatever action is possible, one, to improve upon the state of the world. And after making this appeal, he undergirds this appeal with an expression of hopefulness. Hope in the ability of humanity to change for the better.
In the course of traveling the world with this message, do you find that that appeal is heeded differently in various countries, and specifically those who paradoxically perhaps pollute the most are the least likely to heed the call?
Yes, it is the case. Some countries are more open to the message of an environment that is being increasingly abused and appreciate the need to do something to change. Some also kind of resist and even deny the need.
Specifically in the United States, with whom does the message of change most easily resonate with? Who are you meeting with?
Here, right now in Villanova, this is a university. So we're meeting with the academia. We're meeting with student bodies. Yesterday, I had a meeting with engineering school students who have all kinds of, you know, projects about sustainability. So among the students, you know, the reception is very positive and they see the need for a change.
It's not surprising that your message is received within universities, but how do you get the message out beyond university walls so that it's received and perhaps accepted?
We use the traditional church structure for getting any message down. It's whenever anything, in this case, issued by the Pope, it goes first through the bishops. Every bishop around the world was prepared for the publication of this message. And from them, we expect that they'll pass it on to their priests, and through the priests, get the communities that they take care of. So we have a clear-cut structure.
Some religious groups criticize that the encyclical went too far. By contrast, though, was there also an internal argument that perhaps the church wasn't going far enough?
Yes. On the 28th of September, right after the Pope visited, you know, the United States, I joined a panel discussion, you know, at Boston College. We had an advisor, you know, a climate scientist from the present, you know, administration, so from the present, the office of the president. And he did an analysis supported by graphs. He pointed out the encyclical didn't go far enough, or the encyclical was weak in its expression of the problem. It could have been stronger. So, yes, this has happened before.
Cardinal Turkson, thanks so much for offering perspective on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks to you. Thanks to your audiences and our prayerful wishes and blessings to them all.
Cardinal Peter Turkson of Ghana helped to draft the Pope's encyclical on ecology, and he's been the public face of the Vatican's new focus on the issue. You can hear much more of our conversation at newsworks.org. Taking a look at this evening's headlines. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is renominating Monmouth County Superior Court Judge David Baumann to serve as state Supreme Court Justice. Christie nominated Baumann for a seat on the state's highest court 3 years ago, but withdrew it after the Senate Judiciary Committee failed to give him a confirmation hearing. Christie says the Supreme Court seat has been held open for 6 years, and delaying action on Baumann's nomination is not acceptable. Oral arguments have concluded in the corruption case of New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez. An appellate panel will now take the next several weeks to decide whether to dismiss charges against the Democrat or uphold a lower court ruling and send the case on to trial. Charges include bribery and theft of honest services. City health officials say the first case of Zika virus has been identified in a Philadelphia resident. The department says the infection occurred in a woman over the age of 60 who had recently returned from travel to the Caribbean. Officials said she was not hospitalized for the infection and is now recovering without complications. 50 degrees, falling to 40 overnight under mostly clear skies. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on WHYY. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's pause now for some music. The band Afro-Celt Sound System is a shifting set of musicians from Ireland, Great Britain, and West Africa. From their first album, Sound Magic, this is Whirly Reel. Afro-Celt sound system with Whirly Reel. The track featured James McNally on Boron, Masamba Diop on Talking Drum, keyboardist Martin Russell, Davey Spillane on Illin Pipes, guitarist Simon Emerson, Celtic harpist Mirthan, and Cauding Sisoko on Cora. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on Pledge Free Y-Stream.
Support for WHYY comes from the Rutgers Camden Professional MBA and Professional Masters in Accounting programs, cohort-based accelerated degree programs designed for working professionals with classes held on Saturdays in Princeton. The next cohort begins this fall. An information session is on Tuesday, March 15th at 6 p.m. at the Crown Plaza, Princeton. pmba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-2700. The Rutgers Camden Professional Degree Programs. Expect more. Be more.
Leap Day only comes once every 4 years, but WHYY is with you every single day, offering fascinating stories and in-depth interviews. Consider using a small chunk of your extra 24 hours to support WHYY and help us to continue to bring you the programming you rely on. Make your gift at whyy.org/support and make your extra day count towards more extraordinary radio. Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. It would take quite a while to list the major notable events in our region, nation, and world since March 27th. Well, hopefully Scott Kelly will have a lot of time to be brought up to speed. He's about to return from points north. Let's learn more with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Well, Derek, they've branded this the year in space, and it's coming pretty close.
Yeah, it is coming pretty close. It's a little short, 340 days to be exact, but that's quite all right because it's the first time that NASA has intentionally put a person, put two people in orbit for one entire or nearly an entire year with the objective of being able to study what might happen to that body over time, given that they actually have a control, if you will, in the study, in the form of Scott's twin brother, Mark Kelly. They're both space veterans, although brother Scott, in this case, when he's done, will have the record of 520 days in space for a NASA astronaut.
And, of course, subjecting Scott to the rigors of sustained time in space is a precursor to, perhaps, at one point, a manned launch to Mars, which would take, what, about 2.5 years?
You know, one of the major things we have to be concerned about on a long-duration trip into space is if you leave a gravity body like Earth, go into space where you have essentially zero microgravity, what happens when you step out on the surface of Mars and you're back in a gravity field again? The muscles of the human body atrophy over time, and so you need to do constant exercise to keep the tone. So this is just one of a number of very important things about the human body that we have to understand that might change in different gravity fields.
Wednesday night at 8, WHYY-TV will air Year in Space, focusing on both Scott Kelly's year and the preparations for it. And yes, it takes a physical toll, but I'm sure it also takes an emotional toll. And there are some compelling scenes with Scott's wife and daughters.
Not surprising that that would be the situation. I mean, it's hard to be in space. And fortunately, the kind of connection that we have to Earth these days is far better than it ever was in the past. So now astronauts on orbit can Skype back and forth with their families, and that's really extraordinarily important.
You know what's nifty? Us conversing here and now on a day that doesn't exist.
I don't know what day you're talking about. Yes, we actually shouldn't be here. The last 3 years, in fact, this day didn't exist. Well, it's Leap Day. It's Leap Day. It's that one day that gets added to the calendar every 4 years to account for the fact that an Earth year actually isn't 365 days. It's 365 days plus 8 hours and a few minutes. Or as I like to say, 365.2425867982437
days. Show off.
Sorry. I just had to throw it in there. But if we didn't account for that little quarter of a day, if we didn't account for that quarter of a day every 4 years, what would happen is that over time, our calendars, our civil calendar that we hang on the refrigerator on January 1st, well, those dates would begin to slide out of synchronization with the seasons of the year. So we have to say thanks to Pope Gregory the 16th in 1582 for giving us the Gregorian calendar.
Derek, you frequently point listeners to the Milky Way in the night sky. Who knew that if you could just factor that out, there are hundreds of galaxies to be seen?
Using new devices connected to the 64-meter Parkes Radio Telescope in Australia, we can now peer through that gas and dust and we've been able to uncover hundreds of new galaxies that seem to be hurtling away from us at an entirely incredible speed.
Is it something we said?
Maybe it's something we were wearing, but this is all part and parcel of the great move of all of the galaxies rushing out through space, including our galaxy. We've been able to determine that our galaxy is zipping along at 2 million kilometers per hour. I hope you don't get seasick.
Thought I felt a breeze. Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on,
finally this evening, an historic Philadelphia tavern is offering a prize to women who get engaged today. The catch? They have to be the ones getting down on one knee. McGillan's Old Ale House is bringing back an Irish tradition. According to legend, St. Bridget complained to St. Patrick that it was unfair to make women wait for the man to pop the question. So they brokered the so-called Leap Day deal, where February 29th would be the one day when it was up to the women. Now here's a little advice to future husbands. Don't wait until next leap year to remember your anniversary. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Tomorrow marks the start of a massive three-month-long cleanup along the entire Schuylkill Valley. More on the effort on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Temple University's Fox School of Business supports WHYY and offers an executive MBA program that is designed to expand the minds and net worth of senior-level professionals. In one weekend per month for 16 months, the Fox Executive MBA enables professionals to take their career to the next level without taking time out of their work week. With career coaching and leadership development, the Executive MBA can help students be competitive in the business world. More at fox.temple.edu/EMBA.
Reading Cold Mountain by Charles Frazier, an American odyssey of a Civil War soldier journeying through a divided country while his beloved struggles back home. Companion books 12 Years a Slave by Solomon Northup and The Civil War by Jeffrey Ward with Rick and Ken Burns add to our historical understanding. One Book, One Philadelphia features 8 inspired weeks of programming through March 30th. Details at freelibrary.org/onebook. The Free Library proudly supports WHYY.
The Cooper Heart Institute supports WHYY. Their multidisciplinary team of cardiologists offers the Watchman device, an innovative, minimally invasive treatment option designed to reduce the need for long-term blood thinners in patients with non-valvular atrial fibrillation, thereby reducing the risk of AFib-related stroke. The Cooper Heart Institute is a comprehensive heart care center with offices throughout South Jersey. Details at cooperhealth.org/watchman.